I like to be honest. I had had all sorts of thoughts of finding some kind of an excuse not to learn this Haftarah. So I was working on all sorts of different shurim, but I think we're going to save them. And the reason why I thought that I would not teach this Haftarah, because I think that it's the most difficult of all the Haftarahs of the year. It's just plain so difficult. Even the translation of the text, even the translation of the text is difficult. But then, on second, third, or fourth thought, I decided we're not going to be cowards. We're going to meet this Haftarah head on. And whatever it is that we're going to be able to cull from it, I'm sure we will gain. The Haftarah from Sefer Yechezkel. It's from chapter 43 in Yechezkel. Beginning with chapter 40 in Yechezkel until the end of the Sefer. Chapter 48, there are eight chapters that deal with the Jewish state in the future, the state of the Jewish state in the future, what the third Beit HaMikdash is going to look like, precise plans, and you're going to see some of the plans in the Haftarah. There are chapters in which Yechezkel describes the division of the land amongst the tribes. I mean, it's unbelievable. A whole plan for the future. It's all here in Sefer Yechezkel. Eight chapters. The portion that is the Haftarah deals with two parts. One, the construction of the Mizbeach, the altar in the Beit HaMikdash, which was described, one altar was described in Parshat Truma and another one in this week's Sedra, Parshat Tetzaveh. It is also going to describe part of the ceremony of inauguration and dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash. Now in the Sedra, chapter 29 in Parshat Tetzaveh, is the description of what will take place at the inauguration of the Mishkan. Now, I'm using two different words. One is inauguration, and the other is dedication. I hope I'm using the words correctly. The inauguration were the 7 days that preceded the official dedication of the Beit HaMikdash, the Mishkan. The Mishkan was dedicated on what day? On Rosh Chodesh Nisan. We're going to come later on, we're going to come to Vayihi by Yom HaShemini, and it came to pass on the eighth day. There were 7 days of dedication, and they are of inauguration. I better keep my terms correct. There were 7 days of inauguration during which Aaron and his sons were taught what to do. During those 7 days, all of the service in the Mishkan was done by Moshe Rabbeinu. On the eighth day, which was Rosh Chodesh Nisan, in the second year in the desert, that day is the day on which Aaron and his children take over the service in the Beit HaMikdash. And of course, that's also the day that is marked with the tragedy of the death of Nadav Avihu, two sons of of Aaron. And then on that same Rosh Chodesh Nisan, the princes of each one of the tribes will begin bringing sacrifices day by day. That's going to be the dedication. Those are the dedication ceremonies. The inauguration ceremonies are the 7 days that precede Rosh Chodesh Nisan. What's described over here is what will take place at the inauguration. And the inauguration is going to be described in Parashat Tzav. The dedication is going to be described in Parashat Naso. So here is sort of, it may sound a little confusing, but it's not so confusing. There's inauguration, and there's dedication, and here we're also going to we're going to find something that we will see happens a number of times in history. It's going to be pointed out by Rashi in this Sedra. There are going to be sacrifices brought during inauguration and dedication that are not normal kinds of sacrifices. Different in kind, different in halacha. Things that would be totally unacceptable under any other circumstances all of a sudden become acceptable when we're talking about dedication. For example, in the dedication of the Mishkan, as we said, the princes of each tribe are going to bring sacrifices, and there's a prince that's going to bring sacrifices, private, personal sacrifices on Shabbat. That's prohibited. That's always prohibited. On Shabbat, the only sacrifices that can be brought are the Korban Tamid, the daily Korban, the communal sacrifices can be brought on Shabbos. Personal sacrifices cannot. But at the time of the dedication of the Mishkan, that's what's going to take place. When Shlomo HaMelech is going to dedicate the Bet HaMikdash, in middle of the days of dedication, Yom Kippur. And you know what that says? Everybody ate and drank on Yom Kippur. Shomu Shamayim, do you understand? Special dispensation. The Bet HaMikdash is being dedicated. And they ate on Yom Kippur. Ate and drank and made merry on Yom Kippur. Is that unusual? I say that's a bit unusual. We will see that the sacrifices that Yechezkel is going to talk about are unusual. Those that were brought when Ezra dedicated the second Beth HaMikdash, unusual, under other circumstances, absolutely unacceptable. This is one of the ideas we're going to have to talk about, but we're going to go step by step. You know, even if I go step by step, I may even, you know, drag things out that long that we won't have to come face to face with all of the serious problems here. But no, at least there are going to be some major ideas that have to be expressed. Perek Mem Gimel, Ata Ben Adam, Hageid et Beit Yisrael, Ata Ben Adam. You, we know already that Yechezkel is called by God Ben Adam, Son of Man. Hageid et Beit Yisrael et Habayit. Tell the house of Israel what the bayit, what the temple is going to be like. V'yikomu me'avonoteihem, they should feel ashamed and embarrassed of their sins. U'modedu et tachnit, and then they should measure the design of the Beit HaMikdash. A necessary preface to it all is that Klal Yisrael do tshuva, that they should feel ashamed and embarrassed. A sense of inner shame and embarrassment is a necessary step in the process of tshuva. V'im nichlamu, and if they will be ashamed, mikol asher also for more that they did, surat habayit, difficult pasuk, surat habayit, the temple and its design, utchunato. Well, Tzurat HaBayit is the form and its design. Umotzav, umovaav, its exits and its entrances. V'chol Tzurotav, and all its forms. V'chol Chukotav, and all its regulations. V'chol Tzurotav. By the way, you may have noticed that the word Tzura is now repeated for the third time. V'chol Toratav, and all of the laws, Hodautam, let them know them. uchetov le'neihem, and write it down before their very eyes, v'yishmeru, and they should guard and keep and remember kol tzurato, all of the forms, that kol chukotav, and all of the laws v'asu otam, and they shall do them. What is this tzura? Time and time again, tzura. The Malbim says there are three basic forms. There is something that is true of every one of the temples. There are certain aspects that are the same. Mishkan, first Bet HaMikdash, second Bet HaMikdash, third Bet HaMikdash. They all have to have a Holy of Holies. They have to have an entranceway. They have to have courtyards. It makes no difference whether it's Mishkan, first Bet HaMikdash, second Bet HaMikdash, third Bet HaMikdash to be built, which is going to be described by Yechezkel. There is also the unique form that each one had that was different from the other. There's a question about it, that the Bet HaMikdash was far, far different in size, and in so many other ways it was far, far different than the Mishkan. There were things in the second Bet HaMikdash that were different than the first, and the third ultimately is going to have all sorts of things that will be different. And then there are unique forms with regard to specific items in the Bet HaMikdash. There's going to be a description over here of the Mizbeach. This Haftorah is going to talk, part one, about the construction of the altar, and part two, it's going to talk about the inauguration ceremony. Those are the two aspects that will be dealt with by the Haftorah. That's a very good question. Are we talking about the second Bet HaMikdash, or are we talking about the third Bet HaMikdash? And since you've asked the question, see what I'm going to ask you to do? I'm going to ask you to turn over for a moment. And we're going to take a look at number one and number four. Yes, Malka? Inauguration? Malka has to, I learn Hebrew from her, and she learns English from me. Inauguration? Good. Inauguration, I'm using the word inauguration as hachinuch likrat, the education of the Kohanim that they should be prepared to serve in the Bet HaMikdash. That's what takes place in Parashat Tetzaveh. Aaron and his sons are inaugurated. There are eight days that are discussed in the parsha. They are the Shmonat Yemei Miluim. Shmonat Yemei Miluim. Yeah, but I thought induction. I don't know. I just never saw the word induction used with regard to a Migdash. So I'm using inauguration, because to inaugurate somebody, no. You inaugurate the President of the United States. You prepare him for his job. He has to take his oath that he is going to protect the democracy of the United States of America. That's inauguration. Inauguration is what takes place, or what is described in this Sedra, how the Moshe Rabbeinu is going to put the garments of the Kohen Gadol on Aaron, the garments of the regular Kohanim on his children. They're going to be taught how to shecht and how to sprinkle the blood. There are so many things that are going to happen. That's the inauguration. That's the chinuch, Rashi calls it. Or it's called Yemei Miluim, when their hands are filled with all that is necessary for them to be able to do it. And then there's a dedication of a building. After it's finished, and after it's standing, isn't that when you make a dedication? You know, I'm beginning to think that the words that I chose are very good. Dedication is Chanukat HaBayit. Inauguration is Yemei Miluim. Now, what are we talking about here? Are we talking about second Beit HaMikdash, third Beit HaMikdash? What are we talking about?
I'll tell you what we're talking about.
We can read the Rambam in number one, and then there's the Rambam number four on the second side. Kol shiurei hanesachim ha'amurim b'sefer Yecheskel, all of the measurements of the libations, nesachim, with every korban you had to bring a certain amount of oil, a certain amount of wine. Kol shiurei, all of the measures of the nesachim that are said in Sefer Yecheskel. U'minyan otam ha'korbanot, and the number of sacrifices. V'sidrei ha'avodah ha'ketuvim sham, and the order of the service that's written in Sefer Yecheskel. Kulim kulam miluim heim. They are all inauguration. The ein nohagin ledorot, and they are not the halacha for all generations. Ela hanovi tziva, the novi commanded. Ufedesh ketzad yu makriven hamiluim. He explains how they're going to bring the sacrifices of miluim. And remember again, Parshas Tetzaveh is talking about the Shmonat Yemei Miluim, the inauguration. Im Chanukat HaMizbeach, Bimei HaMelech HaMashiach. We're being taught over here what the dedication is going to be like in the days of King Mashiach, Kishiyibone Bayit Shlishi, when the third Bet HaMikdash is going to be built. Ukishem Shehikrivu HaNasim, Bechanukat HaMizbeach, Dvorim Shein Kibotam Ledorot, and just like the princes, as we described, the princes are going to dedicate the Mishkan, and that's going to take place in the month of Nisan. They brought sacrifices that such do not exist for all generations. V'hikrivu b'Shabbat, I gave you the example that they brought sacrifices on Shabbat. Kach Hanasi Makriv Chanukato b'Shabbat La'atid. The Nasi, the prince, is going to bring his dedication sacrifice on Shabbat La'atid in the future, Kasher Meforasham, as is explained there in Yecheskel. The Chen Korbanot Shehikrivu B'mei Ezra, Haboim Mei Hashvi, those sacrifices that were brought in the days of Ezra by those who returned from the captivity, Mei Hashvi, the captivity of Bavel. Miluim Hayu. These were inauguration sacrifices. Ve'enam nohagin ledorot, and they are not the way sacrifices are brought for all generations. These are all exceptions. The korbanos in Tetzaveh are exceptions. The korbanos that were brought at the dedication of the first Bet HaMikdash were exceptions to the rule. The sacrifices that were brought at the dedication of the second Bet HaMikdash in the days of Ezra, those who returned, were also exceptions. And what Yecheskel is going to tell us about the dedication of the third Bet HaMikdash, exceptions to the rule. Exceptions to the rule. We may yet get to the point at which we will realize that there is a difference between ongoing sacrifice and the moment at which God brings His divine presence to rest on the Mishkan of the Bet HaMikdash. When God brings His divine presence down, that is a moment of great chiba, great love. And at a moment of great love, the unusual and the exceptional is acceptable. And each one of the korbanos that are listed over here are the korbanos that come at the moment of a burst of great passionate love between HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Am Yisrael. And at that moment, the unacceptable becomes acceptable. The unhalachic becomes halachic. The unusual becomes that which can be done. Yes, and we're going to have to explain that idea. Good question. Yecheskel was one of those who went into exile the same time that Mordechai went into exile, before the destruction of the first Bet HaMikdash. That's a very good question. I'm telling you today, I'll tell you what a question is. So why is he talking about the third Bet HaMikdash? So we're going to have to see something else over here. You're doing very well today on such a difficult haftarah. You're doing very well, and I'll explain to you right away. That's going to be one of the major themes in just one moment. But first we're finishing with Feige and that, and then we get to you. וכן קורבנו שהקריבו ומי עזרה הבויים מעשבים מילואים היו ואין הנוגע לדורות. אבל דבורים הנוגע לדורות, those things that, those halachas with regard to sacrifice, that are for all generations, הן דברי תורה שפירשנו, those are the words of Torah that we have explained. The Rambam gives us all of halachas of korbanos. כמו שהעתיקום מפי משה רבנו, as they received them from Moshe. Ain lahosif alein, you can't add to them. The ain legroa, and you can't subtract anything. All the Rambam is saying that all of the halachas that he's going to tell you in the laws of korbanos and the laws of Beth Hamikdash, those are the laws for all generations. But there are exceptions, and he wants you to know that all of the exceptions were the sacrifices that were brought at the initiation. That's another nice word that can go with inauguration and dedication. And that we will see. Chazal talk about the moment of great, the burst of God's love to the Jewish people. Now, to finish the answer to Feige's question, go to number 4. Binyan Shebono Shlomo, that building that was built by Shlomo Kvar Meforash B'Malachim, in chapter 6 and 7 of Sefer Melachim, it's all explained. V'chein binyan he'atid lihibanot, the building that is going to be built, the third Beit HaMikdash. Af al pi shehu katuv b'Yecheskel, even though it is written in Sefer Yecheskel, eino meforash u'mevoar. It's not so explained and it's not so clear. That's why I told you it's going to be a difficult haftarah. The people of the second Beit HaMikdash, when they built it in the days of Ezra, Bonuhu kibinyan Shlomo, umein dvorim hamafuroshim b'Yecheskel. The second Beit HaMikdash was built with the plans of the first Beit HaMikdash, but those aspects of the construction that are written here in Yecheskel, that are clearly understood, were incorporated into the second Beit HaMikdash. That means the second Beit HaMikdash did in fact have in it already seeds of the future. Now I want to answer Annette's question. Okay? Back to the first side. On the bottom, at the end of the Haftorah, I have Rashi from the beginning of this section of the Haftorah. First line where it says Matsati, Rashi says, I found the following. And what he's really doing is he's quoting a Gemara that appears in Masechet Brachot, where the Gemara says the following, Re'uya haita bi ashniya shel Ezra ki biya rishona shel Yehoshua. How many times did Jews enter Eretz Israel? And how many times did Jews enter Eretz Israel from a halachic point of view? I mean, I heard Feige Kahane when she said 3. She is correct. Historically, she's absolutely correct. There are 3 entries of the Jewish people into Eretz Israel. The first, as a people, was in the days of Yehoshua. The second were the pitiful few that returned with Ezra from Bavel. And we, all of us here, are parts of the third return to Eretz Israel. Even the Shlemazels amongst us are all part of the third return to Eretz Israel. Okay? All right, I couldn't help that. From a halachic point of view, the Rambam says there were 2 entries to Eretz Israel. There was the entry in the days of Yehoshua, where the land was sanctified by Yehoshua. And we've already talked a number of times about this Rambam, where the Rambam says that the first sanctity of Eretz Israel, which was done in the days of Yehoshua, came to an end with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Because the first sanctity of Eretz Israel was through conquest. Yehoshua conquered the land. Kibush is not morally destructive. Kibush is that which sanctifies Eretz Yisrael, Jews conquering their own land as a mitzvah given by God. This sanctifies land. Okay? That was a halachic statement. You might think otherwise. Don't report me. All right? That sanctity came to an end with the destruction of the first Beit HaMikdash. Because the sanctity came through conquest. Along came the counter-conquest of Babylon, the forces of Nebuchadnezzar, and the counter-conquest canceled out the Kedusha of the first conquest. Are you like that? That was a pretty good sentence. I'm in the middle of a thought. I'll finish it. I'll give you all the time. Ezra returned to Eretz Yisrael with 42,000 men, and we discussed the 42,000 dredges of Jewish society from Babel that came back here to build the second temple and the second commonwealth, with their 9,000 horses and 6,000 camels, and every one of the animals is mentioned because those are holy animals, animals that made Aliyah. And that's why Ezra mentions every last animal that came. Yehoshua sanctifies the land. I mean, I can't help it, but these are the words of the Rambam. Yehoshua sanctifies the land, not by conquest. Yehoshua sanctifies the... Ezra. Good. You know, I always get my names mixed up. I need you. What would I do without you? Ezra sanctifies the land not via conquest, because he has no army. He comes by the good graces of Koresh, king of Persia. He sanctifies the land. I think I should shudder even more when I'm going to use the next word. He's by settlement. If conquest is bad, settlement now is even worse. What a crazy world we're living in. It's unbelievable. I don't know what world I'm living in. But the Rambam makes it quite clear that Yehoshua sanctified by conquest, and Ezra and Nehemiah sanctified the land by settlement. So Rashi says the following, and it's a quote from the Gemara in Brachos, that Israel could have been worthy that Ezra would return the same way Yehoshua entered the land, with great miracles and conquest. There was a missed opportunity. They were unworthy. It's because they were unworthy that it was not done with great miracles as it was in the days of Yehoshua. The Jordan split. The walls of Jericho came tumbling down. The sun stopped in the heavens and the moon remained over Emek Ayalon. It didn't happen miraculously, and it didn't happen through conquest, because Israel was unworthy. But Rashi says, "Ru'uya hayta." It could have been. There was a missed opportunity. It could have been. It could have been that the second time Jews come in the days of Ezra should have been like the first of Joshua, which is lavo to come bizroa, the might, arms, ubenes, and with a miracle. Kiddashinon, as the Gemara learns from Ad Ya'avor, at the end of Oz Yashir it says, Ad Ya'avor Amcha Hashem, Ad Ya'avor Amzu Kanita. Until they cross over, it says it twice. One crossing over is talking about Yehoshua entering Eretz Yisrael, and the second is talking about Ezra entering Eretz Yisrael. But you see, there's a difference. In the first, it says, Ad Yavor Amcho Hashem, until your people, God's people, cross. God is with them. Ad Yavor Amzu, until this people crosses over. The second time they entered Eretz Yisrael was not the way the first was. But it could have been, and it should have been. Ubinyan Zeh, I'm not finished the rest. Ubinyan ze me'oz hayoroy lehem kisha'olu min hagola legulat olam. Now listen carefully. What could have happened was that building, that second Beth HaMikdash, should have been for eternity and should have signaled the beginning of ultimate redemption. It was an awesome opportunity. And the opportunity wasted, frittered away, never realized, and all the unhappiness of Jewish history that comes afterwards is because there was a missed opportunity. Rashi says, chet caused it, sin caused it. What's the chet? What sin was it at the time of Ezra? Well, that's the third pshat. We have to see Rashi. What you're saying is the Marsha. The Marsha says the chet was they didn't come. 42,000 came. And that's another Gemara. The Gemara says in Yuma, would Jews have come in the days of Ezra en masse? Jewish history would have been completely different. The second Beit HaMikdash would have become the ultimate Beit HaMikdash, and redemption would have taken place. Klal Yisrael made a mistake. There was a great opportunity. Unfortunately, it's amazing that we keep surviving with all of these missed opportunities. We keep missing them time and time again. But Rashi says, "Shegorabachet shelo haitak shuvatam hogenet." Remember, Yecheskel over here said, "Be ashamed and embarrassed of your sins." If they would have really done tshuva, that second Beit HaMikdash would have been the ultimate. They should have done tshuva al menat shelo lachto, that they will never sit again. But because they didn't do tshuva, so their return to Eretz Yisrael was by the good graces of the nations of the world. V'yotzu b'reshut korash. They left the exile because they were granted permission by a pagan and heathen king called Korash. U'bonu la'atzman. And they built it themselves. These are very significant words of Rashi. Because there's a Rashi in Gemara Sukkah where Rashi says that the third Beit HaMikdash is going to come down fully built from heaven. So when Rashi says, Ubanu la'atzman, they built it themselves, means that they had to build it themselves, and because they built it themselves, it didn't contain within it the seeds of eternity. Rashi says, there are those who say that the chet was, b'bavel nichshlu b'nachriyot. In Bavel, they had stumbled and erred, and there was intermarriage, nachriyot, with non-Jewish women. Those are the positions taken by Rashi. But as we pointed out, it is Marsha who says that the chet, why things didn't happen the way they could have happened and they should have happened, is because they didn't come an aliyah en masse. I didn't answer your questions? No? I tried my best. Yes. What you're saying is very, very good, and I tell you, I will explain to you in a moment what she said. I'll explain to you, especially since I heard a similar idea about half an hour ago from her husband. You understand? And that was part of his parsha letter of last week, which I didn't read on the internet yet because I didn't open up my computer. And it's an idea I think that we have expressed from time to time. In other words, those unworthy people who came with Ezra sanctified the land forever. Never underestimate the power of a Jew. There was a great leader, yes, who brought them into a new covenant. But remember, Rabbi Yehuda Halevi in the Kuzari says that the great didn't come back. Gedoleim lo olu. The great didn't come back. And who came? The simple people. And those simple people, Amcha are the ones who were able to sanctify the land. I tell you, I was at this conference, rabbinic conference in Eilat. I mean, you should have felt different in the country because we resolved all of the outstanding issues there. So I was talking with Rav Yaakov Filber, who was one of the interpreters of Rav Kook. So, something that I've expressed here at times, that I have a great deal of trust or confidence. I'll use the word confidence. I was going to use the word faith, which is bad. Trust even. But I have confidence in the healthiness of the Jewish people. The people are healthy. The people are more healthy than their leadership. More healthy than their leadership. So he tells me that he once heard from Rabbi Tzvi Yehuda Kook, Zeichet Tzabek Vrochi, and the Davening on Shabbos, we say, Befi Yisharim Tisromam, God is exalted through the mouths of the righteous, Befi Yisharim Tisromam, over Sifsei Tzadikim Tisborach, and the lips of the righteous you are blessed, Befi Yisharim Tisromam, over Sifsei Tzadikim Tisborach, over Lishon Chasidim Tiskadosh, Uvekerev Kedoshim Tishalol, the Hasidim and the Kedoshim praise. What an array of exceptional and unusual people, said Rav Tzvi Yehuda Kook. But you know what's most important? What comes immediately afterwards? Ubimakhalot Rivavot Abcha Beit Yisrael. The masses of tens of thousands of Jews, there comes the real praise of God. Not enough the Yeshurim, not enough the Tamimim, not enough the Tzadikim, not enough the Hasidim. You know what you need? The Mechalot Rivavot Amcha Beis Yisrael. The tens of thousands of the masses of Jews. Poshet Yidden, if you can even call a Jew Poshet, had the tremendous power of establishing the sanctity of the second Bet HaMikdash and the land sanctified for the second time, and that sanctity remains until today and into eternity. Yes. You know what you sound like? You sound... Toby, you're shaking up the whole place. But what I was going to say was the following. What you're really saying, I believe, is, as one of my children said when we celebrated 20 years of Aliyah, she said that we don't really get credit for coming on Aliyah because you brought us on Aliyah. You know we get credit for sticking it out and staying. Is that what you said, Toby? We're thinking alike. It's amazing. It's amazing. That was a great word that my daughter said. Okay. I only have three, and one is here. You can try and figure out. Rashi, you know what Rashi is saying, and you know what the Rambam is saying? It could have been. Everything that Yechezkel describes could have been for eternity. But there are missed opportunities. And they are the seeds of tragedy. There are opportunities, and we have to know. We have to have the wisdom to know What's the moment of great opportunity? You have to be able to grab the moment. Because if you don't grab the moment, I don't know. You don't always get a second chance. I've been speaking with a lot of people here and people in Jewish leadership in the United States, and I'm telling them, those who made big mistakes in assessing the situation 12 years ago, you've been given a second chance now. Can't goof it a second time. But all right, I'm steering clear of that. What it means is the following. That according, the Rambam goes one step further than Rashi. The Rambam is saying that there are elements of Yechezkel. Yechezkel could have been talking to his people. He could have been saying it for the here and the now in his days. It could have been. And for that reason, some of the things that were said by Yechezkel were indeed incorporated into the construction of the second Beit HaMikdash. But Rashi says, because we didn't make it, There are a number of other ideas that become clear as a result of this. There's a machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban. The machloket, one of the machloket between the Rambam and the Ramban is with regard to the house of the Chashmonoim. The Rambam talks about the dynasty of the Chashmonoim. He talks about it in a festive manner. When he talks about Hanukkah, the forces of the Chashmonoim entered the Beit HaMikdash and began the process of rededicating it. That was another dedication. That's one that we didn't mention. By the way, that's also extremely significant. There's the dedication of the Mishkan, first Beit HaMikdash, second Beit HaMikdash, third Beit HaMikdash, but in the middle, there was Hanukkah. Very important. The Rambam says, what was so great about Hanukkah? Chozro ha-malchut li-Yisrael yeter al-matayim shona. Royalty, a royal house returned to the Jewish people for more than 200 years. He talks about it as, this is really something great. The Ramban in Chumash, in Pasha Fayechi, says that the kingdom of the Chashmonoim was born in sin. Because Malchus belongs to the house of David, to the tribe of Yehuda. It doesn't belong to the tribe of Levi. And because it was born in sin, then it ultimately had to crumble. I believe the Rambam is best explained by something that is still written from Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zechut Tzadik L'Racha. He said that when Chazal, when our rabbis realized that Bayit Sheni was not going to be eternal, when they realized the missed opportunity, they didn't want a kingdom from the house of David. A kingdom from the house of David might have left the impression with the Jewish people that this is it, Mashiach now. It might have left the impression as though this is it, this is Geula now, Yechi HaMelech HaMashiach. But they knew that it wasn't going to last. They knew that the opportunity had been missed. They knew that Goram Achet. Therefore, a kingdom of the house of Levi was far, far better for the Jewish people. Rabbi Yaakov even says, strange thing, the Gemara says, the name in Torah, how are months described? First month, second month, Chodesh HaRishon, Chodesh HaShlishi, Chodesh HaChamishi. The first time that we begin to hear names of months, when you come to Megillas Esther, it talks about Adar, it talks about Nisan. Mara says that the names of the months came with them from Bavel. So now the question is, if the names of the months came with them from Bavel, then they were really Babylonian names. There was, in a sense, they had incorporated into what's now... I always said that I envy my grandchildren. I tell them I'm going to do something in March. They don't have a clue what I'm talking about. They don't have a clue. If I tell them, oh, they're bad, oh, now they know what I'm talking about. I was even planning some kind of a few weeks ago, I was planning something to take place at the beginning of March. So the fellow says, oh, it was automatically Lefnei Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni. Yeah, right, that's right, Lefnei Rosh Chodesh, before Rosh Chodesh Adar Sheni. Unfortunately, we're fagoyish, you understand. We were raised in America. I don't think we'll ever get it out of our kishkis la'olam va'ed. When I think of a hot summer day, I think of July or August. I don't think of Tammuz or Av. And I tell you, it upsets me because the only thing I got rid of, is Sunday. Sunday? Listen to Sunday. I used to plan the week around, you know, a whole week, and then the Sunday. And Monday you go back to work. What do you mean Monday you go back to work? Sunday you go back to work. That we got rid of. It took, by the way, a number of years. For me it may have been easier because as a rabbi, Sunday was the most difficult day of the week. I worked more on Sunday than I worked the rest of the week. There was a chasen and a bar mitzvah and two unveilings and then three bat mitzvahs and who knows what, you understand. I waited, thank God it's Monday. So Rabbi Yaakov says, do you know why they adopted the names of the months that they brought with them from Bavel? This was another reminder to them, we have not yet rid ourselves of the galus. This second Bet HaMikdash may not last forever. And that's what Rashi is saying. The missed opportunity. Goram HaChet. And therefore what could have been eternal simply was not going to be eternal. But one thing does remain eternal. The sanctity of the land that was brought about by those 42,000 fellas who came on Aliyah, that sanctity remains ad ha ad yom hazeh. There is, let's see, on the other side, I'm just going to... I'm just going to introduce you to an idea that I started the shiur with, but I want you to see where the source of this idea is. Number two, we have a pasuk in Shir HaShirim, and below it is the Rashi. I'm going to read the pasuk and the Rashi, and in this amazing Rashi, with a powerful, powerful medrash, all of a sudden you're going to begin to get a feeling of what's taking place here. Bosi legani achosi kala. I am come into my garden. Achoti, my sister, kala, my bride. Oriti mori imbesami. I have gathered my myrrh imbesami with my spice. Ochalti. This is the important phrase. Ochalti yari im divshi. I have eaten my honeycomb with my honey. Wait a minute. You don't eat honeycombs. You eat honey. You don't eat... The honeycomb is the wax. You don't eat the honeycomb. And over here the pasuk is saying... And who's the one that's come into the garden? The one who's come into the garden is God. The Rebbein Shem, I've come into the garden, my sister, my bride. Who is the man or the lad in Shir HaShirim? That's God. Who is the girl, the beloved, the Jewish people? The Jewish people. Bosi Legami, I've come into my garden. We're going to see Rashi is going to bring the medrash that says, my garden is the Bet HaMikdash. Now watch. I came and ochalti, I ate yari im dishi, the honeycomb with the honey. Yeni im chalavi, my wine with my milk. Ichlu rein, eat, O friends. Shtu, drink. V'shichru dodim, doesn't really mean be drunk, just the English translation is great, to drink abundantly. Rashi says, Basi Lagani, Bimei Chanukat HaBayit. I came into my garden in the days of the dedication of the Beit HaMikdash. He doesn't say which one, but from the context of Shir HaShirim, it's talking about the second Beit HaMikdash. Because already the history of the Jewish people in the Mishkan had begun in the first chapter. By now he's up to the Chanukat HaBayit. Oriti means lokatati, I gathered. Vulosh in Mishnah, Kimlo Oda, Vesalo. Okay. Vaf Lishon Mikro, Varua, Kolore, Deach, Ainsham. Haketoret, Shehiktiru Anasiyim, the ketoret, the incense that was brought by the princes at the dedication of the Mishkan. Ketoret Yochid, it was the ketoret of an individual al Mizbeach HaChitzon, on the outer altar. An individual never brings ketoret. This flies in the face of halacha. It's completely unusual. Number one, that ketoret is brought by an individual. Number two, that it's brought on the outside altar, not the altar inside, which was the altar for the incense. Vinit kabla, and that which was done, shelo kahalacha, not like normative halacha, was accepted. And that's something that does not apply to all generations. That's why it says over here in this passage, Ochalti ya'ari im divshi. I ate the honeycomb with the honey. Do you know what it means? Yesh dvashu hu gadol b'konim, there is honey that grows on trees or on stalks. Kinyin shenema b'yarat hadvash. V'yaratu lashon kone, cane. Like sugar cane. Kamo v'atosem v'asuf. Miriam placed the basket in which Moshe was. She placed it in the suf, the growth, the reeds, and the Targum says the shavita biyaro. She placed it in the yaro. Yaro means the konim. Umotzitzin advash. From this cane, you suck out the honey, and then you throw away the cane. All right. You throw away the wood. Vani, God says, listen. Meirov chiba, because of my great love, ochalti yari in divshi. I ate the comb or the cane with the honey. Ochalti hakone im hadvash. And what does hakone im hadvash mean? Et she'eno roi im haroi. That which is normally unacceptable, together with that which is acceptable. Rashi is saying, and Rav Huttner has a great mimer that we won't be able to go into now, we'll find another time for it, but basically he says, this is an expression of an outburst of great love, that one does the unusual and the unacceptable becomes acceptable, and God is saying, the moment at which I bring my divine presence to rest amongst my beloved people is a time, a moment frozen in time, at which I accept the unacceptable together with the acceptable. It's all because of this overwhelming sense of my wanting to be with my people. Which really, this medrash that's brought by Rashi, is the operative medrash that explains the unusual and the otherwise halachically unacceptable that takes place at the inauguration and the dedication of the Mishkan. In the inauguration of the Mishkan, Moshe Rabbeinu is going to do all of the service in the Mishkan. He's not a Kohen. The Nesiim are going to bring all sorts of sacrifices that under normal circumstances are unacceptable. It's going to happen by the dedication of the first Beit HaMikdash, where of all things, the number of sacrifices have nothing to do with the sacrifices of dedication. Shlomo HaMelech brought 10,000 or 20,000 sheep. It was all, and as we said, they ate on Yom Kippur. They ate on Yom Kippur. The second Beit HaMikdash, Yechezkel is going to talk about sacrifice of the wrought under normal circumstances, totally unacceptable. Same thing will be true at the dedication of the third Beit HaMikdash. But there's one difference between all of those and Hanukkah. All of them were either by divine decree or through prophecy. But there was no prophecy at the time of Hanukkah. There were no prophets anymore. Haggai, Zechariah, Malachi, who were at the beginning of the second Beit HaMikdash, they were the last of prophets. But you know what God did? He wanted to tell the Jewish people that with the Kohanim coming into the Beit HaMikdash, we have returned, Chazal describe it as having returned L'chibar Rishona, the first love. But there was no prophet. So you know who sent the message? God himself sent the message that the jar of oil that was supposed to last one day lasted 8 days. And for that matter, even that was non-halachic. Big question whether you can use oil that is miracle oil. You know, you're supposed to buy your oil in the makolet. And the oil in the makolet, you understand, comes from an olive. It doesn't come from a miracle. HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself is the one who tells Klal Yisrael that our relationship of profound love has begun all over again. And therefore, in the absence of a Yechezkel, it's God himself who descends and tells Klal Yisrael that this new relationship, a renewed sense of love between him and the Jewish people. So there are unusual and exceptional things. By the way, the Gemara says that we owe a great debt to Rab Hananya ben Chizkiyahu. Our rabbis wanted to hide the book of Yechezkel because there are so many things in the book of Yechezkel that seem to be in conflict with the words of Torah. Gemara describes that he took 300 jars of oil and he went up into an attic. The jars of oil was so that he could burn his lamp late at night, and he explained all of Sefer Yechezkel, so you should know that there's nothing Yechezkel said that contradicted the words of Torah. And in certain respects, where Yechezkel says things that are different, it's all because of Chiba Rishona, the moment, the chuppah, the moment of great love. The unacceptable becomes acceptable. God, ochalti yardi im divshi. I consume, I take the cane with the dvash. Very powerful, powerful idea that needs a great deal more elaboration. But I think, I feel like a shtickle hero. I went through two psukim from the Haftorah. You understand? Didn't have to go through the rest. But we got at least some of the ideas that this profound, profound Haftarah. Okay.